Start from the bottom of Mem Vav Amud Beis by the two dots at the bottom line. So the Mishnah said, Zakai ben Mitziyasa, Mishum Eivan. The Mishnah said that one of the many benefits that the father gets from his daughter is any lost objects that she finds goes to the father. And the reason is because we want to boil down the temperature. We don't want there to be any hatred that the father is supporting his daughter and his daughter's not giving him anything in return. So the daughter has to give any lost objects that she finds. How do we know that any wages that the girl earns goes to the father? The Amar Rav Huna Marav, Minayin Shemaisa Habas La'av, Shene Amar Rechim Kor. So the Gemara says the way that we know that the father gets any wages the girl earns is based on a comparison between a maidservant, where anything that she earns goes to her master, so too anything that the girl earns goes to the father. So the Gemara asks, the Gemara says maybe that's only true if the daughter is a ketana, because there the father has the ability to sell his daughter as a ketana to be a maidservant. But the father does not have the ability to sell his daughter who's a nara as a maidservant. So one could have argued that maybe he's only entitled to his daughter who's a ketana, in other words, only to her wages. But who says that he's entitled to the wages of his daughter who's a nara? So the Gemara says, no. Mistabra de avia havu. De isal kedai dechmaisi ade alav de avia. Elo ha de zachili rachamana la'av le'mimsura le'chupa hechi matzi masarla. Hakam evata lami maisi ade. The Gemara says, you have to say that the father is entitled to the wages even if his daughter is a nara. Why do you have to say that? Because we know that a father is allowed to marry off his daughter until she's a bogeres, which means even when she's a nara. The problem is that if the father has the right to marry her off, isn't that going to cost her wages? In other words, she could have been working during the time that she's getting married. So now the father apparently has the ability to say, you know what, you're not making $15 an hour for the couple of hours that you're getting married. I'm overriding that ability. The fact that the father can do that implies that the father's entitled to her wages. If the father was not entitled to her wages, what right does he have to marry off his daughter? So the Gemara pushes back. Parak Rav Achai, Ema de Yohev Lascharp Kata, Inami de Matzer La Belelia, Inami de Matzer La Beshabasus Vyamin Tovim. The Gemara says, maybe not. Maybe the father married her off in such a way where either he compensated her for the loss of work, or maybe he married her off at night when she wasn't working anyway, or maybe he married her off on Shabbos or Yontif, again, without getting into all the details about whether you can even get married on Shabbos or Yontif. That's a whole separate issue. In other words, again, the point is that maybe he married her off at a time when she wasn't working anywhere, either where she wasn't allowed to work, or maybe he compensated her for the loss of work. So who's, in other words, maybe this is not a proof that the father is entitled to the wages of a nara. So the Gemara says, you're right. El ketana lo tzricha kra. Hashta zabuni mezabin la maisei adam yiboy. El ki itzrich kra le nara. The Gemara says, it's obvious, in other words, it has to be that the pasuk is talking about a case that the father is entitled to the wages of his daughter who's a nara. You don't need a pasuk to tell me that the father gets the wages of his daughter who's a ketana. The father can sell off his daughter who's a ketana into slavery, then kal v'chomer, he should be entitled to her wages. So the pasuk therefore must be teaching me that the father is entitled to the wages of his daughter who's a nara. Okay, then we said about hafaras nedareha minalan, dechsiv binu reha beisavya. How do we know that a father has the ability to annul his daughter's vows? That's the pasuk in the beginning of Parshas Matos that says binu reha beisavya, when the girl makes nedarim in her father's house, when she's a nara, so the father has the right to annul those debts. How do we know that a father can accept a get on his daughter's behalf? So again, we know from many places throughout Shas that there are many comparisons that are drawn between marriage and divorce. So based on a pasuk in Parshas Kiseitze v'yatzav v'haisa, so just as a father can accept kiddushin on his daughter's behalf, so too he can accept a get on his daughter's behalf as well. Ve'eno ochel peros b'chayeha. Tanu rabbanan. Ha'av eno ochel peros b'chayeh bito. Reb Yosi b'Reb Yehuda omer ha'av ochel peros b'chayeh bito. We have a machlokas between the Tanakam and Reb Yosi as to whether a father is entitled to eat the peros, any of the fruit from the fields, or any of the products that the girl owns. Is the father entitled to eat those things during his daughter's lifetime? So the Gemara explains. But Ma'ikom Miflagei Tanakam Savar Bishlam Abalta Kinule Rabbanan Peire De'imkein Mimna V'Laparik Ela Av Ma'ikol Amemar De'Mimna V'Laparik B'Lav Hachi Parikla. So according to the Tanakam, he says Chazal made a takana that a husband is entitled to eat the peros of any property that the woman brings into the marriage, because otherwise he's not going to be incentivized to, let's say, redeem her from captivity. We want to give the husband some sort of a financial incentive to eventually redeem his wife. If his wife ever gets taken captive, so he's going to say, listen, I'm not shelling out money to go redeem my wife. So Chazal said, listen, we're going to let you eat the peros in exchange for in the small chance that she ends up getting taken into captivity, you're going to have to redeem her. Whereas when it comes to a father, the Gemara, so the Tanakhama says the father's not going to not redeem his daughter from captivity just because she's not giving him the payros. So therefore, Chazal never made that tagana. However, for Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, savar avnami mim naval parik savar kisa nikita ilavat teils of a sefer gnafsha. Whereas according to Rabbi Yosi, a father would also make that same argument and say, no, I'm not going to pay to redeem my daughter. She has a purse full of money. I gave her some allowance in case she was ever taken captive, so she can go redeem herself. She doesn't need me to redeem her. So according to Rabbi Yosi, there was a takana also for the father, that the father is also entitled to eat the payros of his daughter's property, again, as an incentive to redeem her from captivity in case that ever occurred. Okay.
It's a pretty sad commentary.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I agree. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, Nises, Yeser love Habal Shehu Ochel. Tanu Rabbanan, Kostav la Perus Ksus Vechelim Sheyavo, Ima Mi Beis Avi Alaviz Baila, Mesa Lo Zacha Habal Bidvarim Halalu, Mishum Rabbi Nasan Amru, Zacha Habal Bidvarim Halalu. We have the following machlokas between the Tanakam and Rabbi Nasan. So imagine the following. A father of the girl decides that he's going to, as part of the girl's dowry, he's going to write over certain clothing and items and utensils and whatever it is to give over to the prospective couple, and then the girl dies prior to Nisuin. So the question is, is the husband now entitled to keep those items? So according to the Tanakhama, he's not, because they never actually went through with the marriage because the wife died. But according to Rabbi Nassan, the husband is entitled to keep those items. So the Gemara explains, Lema biflukta de Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah verabbanon kam biflugate. This non, this armela onis garsha bein min hanisuin bein min ha'eris in gova es hakol. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah omer min hanisuin gova es hakol. Min ha'eris in besula gova masayim bi'almanam man. So the Gemara wants to claim that our machlokas here between the Tanakhama and Rav Nassan as to whether the husband is entitled to the items that the father committed to giving in that marriage, and then the girl dies before the marriage, whether the husband is entitled to keep those items, is basically the same exact machlokas as a mission a little bit later on between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah about the father. It's actually almost the opposite of the case that we're presenting here. So let's say, for example, a girl becomes widowed or divorced. So the question is, how much of the ksuba is she entitled to collect? So according to the Rabbanan, she's entitled to collect the entirety of the ksuba. That includes the base amount of 1 or 200, depending if she was a basula or not when she got married, plus any additional tosefes, any additional amounts that the husband pledged to give. And that's true whether she becomes widowed or divorced from Erisin or from Nisuin. Whereas according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that's only true that she collects the entirety of the ksuba if she becomes widowed or divorced from Nisuin. But if she only became widowed or divorced from Erisin, says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, then she's only entitled to the base amount, the 1 or 200 of the ksuba, but not any additional tosefes that the husband pledged to give, because that additional amount that the husband pledged to give, he was only going to give if they actually went through with the marriage. So the Gemara wants to suggest that the opinion in our Gemara that says that the husband is not entitled to keep the items that the father committed to giving over, that was the opinion of the Tanakhama. So they're going to hold like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and Rabbi Nassan, who said that the husband gets to keep those items, so presumably he's going to hold it the Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, "Lo, dechule alma k'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, man da'amar lo zacha k'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, uman da'amar zacha ad kan lo ka'amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, ela midide lidida, shelo kasev la ela amenas lechonsa, aval midida lidide, afilu Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah mode demishum ichatunehu v'ha ichatunehu." Then the Gemara pushes back and says, "No, everyone subscribes to this position of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in the Mishnah later on, where he says." That in the case where the woman becomes widowed or divorced from Erisin, she's only entitled to the base amount of the ksuba, but not anything additional, because again, they didn't actually go through with the marriage. And the Gemara explains that the opinion in our Gemara that says that the husband is entitled to keep any items that the father committed, even if the girl dies before the marriage. So basically, Rabbi Elazar draws a distinction between whether it's going from the man to the woman versus the woman to the man. In our case, we're talking about the father of the girl committing to give certain items to the husband and then the girl dying. So it could be that even Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would admit that the husband's entitled to keep those items, because at the end of the day, there was a relationship that was built between the two families. Even though Lemaisa, the marriage never went through because the girl died prior to Nisuin, but there was a relationship that was built up, and that's what the father of the girl was committing to give certain items as a result of that relationship. Whereas over here, when we're talking about a scenario where the woman is trying to collect the value of the ksuba from the man, so there you can argue that she's only going to be entitled to collect the full value if they actually went through with the Nisuin. Okay, Then we said chaya b'mzonoseha. Tanu rabbanan tiknu mzonoseha tachas naiseha de'a ukfuras tachas ksubasa lefichach balo chaperos. The Gemara seems to have some sort of a cryptic statement here where it says that Chazal instituted that a husband has to support his wife in exchange for her giving him any wages that she earns. Also, a husband is obligated to bury his wife, and that's in exchange for the wife providing, you know, certain things from her dowry that she pledges to bring into the marriage. And then the Gemara says, therefore, the husband is entitled to eat the peros of any possessions that the wife brings into the marriage. So the Gemara asks, peros man decharishmayu, who mentioned anything about peros? Peros seems to be almost an afterthought. It seems to be not related to what the Gemara was just discussing. So the Gemara says, no. Chasuri mechzer v'hachi katani. Tiknu mizono seha tachas maise odeha, ufirko na tachas peros, ukfuras tachas ksubasa, lefichach baloch peros. The Gemara says that we actually missed the case. First we said that Chazal instituted that a husband has to support his wife in exchange for her wages. And then that a husband is obligated to redeem his wife from captivity, that's in exchange for the fact that he's entitled to eat the peros. That's the relevance, you know, of peros to our Gemara. And again, he has to bury her in exchange for anything from the dowry that she brings. And therefore, the husband's entitled to eating peros. So again, the Gemara asks, my lefichach. The word lefichach literally means therefore. So that sounds like there's some sort of a transition. Because Chazal, in other words, Chazal said X, Y, and Z, therefore the husband gets to eat fruit. It sounds like it was just a takana. It sounds like Chazal said, you redeem your wife from captivity, and as a result, you're going to eat fruit. But the question is, what's, in other words, the Gemara seems to be assuming that there's some sort of a reason behind this takana. But the Gemara is just presenting it as the fact, as this is the way that it is. So the Gemara says, no. Mahu desema mechal lanachlinu anuche nanchinu. De'imkein mimna v'laparik kamash malan doha adifa. Zimnin de la malu ufarik la midi day. The Gemara says like this. One could have argued that maybe we should dafka not allow the husband to consume the peros from his wife's possessions. Why not? Because what if the wife, again, gets taken captive, and the husband is going to be too stingy or too cheap to shell out his own money to redeem his wife? So one could have argued, well, let him at least use the peros from his wife's property to go redeem her. The problem is, what if the value of the peros don't amount to the asking price from the captors? So it's very possible that the husband is going to be disincentivized from wanting to redeem his wife. So Chazal said, we're going to institute this takana and allow the husband to eat the peros, so this way he's now obligated to shell out money on his own to redeem his wife in the event that she eventually gets taken captive. So fine. Then the Gemara asks, the epochana, why don't we reverse the nature of the takana? So in other words, the Gemara earlier said that Chazal instituted that a husband has to support his wife in exchange for her wages, or that a husband has to redeem his wife from captivity in exchange for the peros. So how do we know that it's dafka, though, you know, in other words, it's mizonos for her wages, it's redeeming her for the peros? Maybe it's the reverse. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye tiknu matsui lematsui v'she'eno matsui l'she'eno matsui. Chazal instituted takanos of things that are common for things that are common, and things that are uncommon for things that are uncommon. In other words, it's very common to support your wife, and it's very common for her to have a job and to make money and to earn wages. So Chazal instituted those two things as paralleling one another, whereas something like her being taken into captivity is much less common, and her, you know, let's say bringing property into the marriage that you know that the husband can be peros from. So I mean, maybe that's a little bit more common, but maybe it's a little bit less likely that the woman would actually bring any property into the marriage. Amar Rava, Haytana Sover Mizonos Mid Oraisa. Desanya Sheira Elu Mizonos V'Chenu Omer V'Asherah Chalu Sheerami Ksusa Kemashmo Onasa Zo Onoha Amura B'Torah V'Chenu Omer Im Ta'anes Ben Osai. So comes Rava and says that this Tana is of the opinion that the obligation for a husband to support his wife is a din de Oraisa. How does he know? That's a famous pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim that talks about the obligations of the original context of this pasuk is actually talking about the obligations that a master has to his maidservant, but eventually the pasukim devolve into discussing the halachos of yi'ud, which is when eventually the master eventually marries the maidservant and essentially lays out some of the laws, some of the obligations that a husband has towards his wife. And the Torah says she'irak susava onasa. So the whole machlokas of the Gemara, as we'll see right now, what these terms mean exactly. So according to the first opinion of the Gemara, the word she'ira refers to mizonos, refers to the obligation to support your wife. It says in Sefer Micha, "Va'asher achelu she'er ami," that literally that the remainder of the people consume the food. So the Gemara is interpreting the word she'er to mean sustenance. Then the Gemara says ksusa just means clothing. You have to provide her clothing and shelter. And then onasa refers to the obligation to have relations with your wife after she goes to the mikvah, after having her period. And the Gemara derives it from a pasuk at the end of Parshas Vayetze, where Lavan says to Yaakov, "Im te'anez ben osai," makes him swear, "You're not going to afflict my daughters, Rachel and Leah, on Bilah and Zilpah, specifically by withholding relations. So that's the first opinion in the Gemara. Rabbi Elazar Omer She'ira Zo'ona, V'cheinu Omer Ish Ishal Kol She'er B'saro Lo Sikrevu L'Galo Serva, K'susa K'mashmo, Onasa Elu Mizonos, V'cheinu Omer V'ayanecha V'yari V'echa. Rabbi Elazar almost reverses the order. He says that the word She'ira is actually a reference to the obligation to engage in relations, and that's again derived from a Pasuk in Acharemos, and the Pasuk can, you know, lay out all the various Isurei Arayos, the various, you know, incestual forbidden relationships. The Torah says, Ish Ishal Kol She'er B'saro, that anyone who has some sort of a familial relationship, you're not allowed to have relations with them. Ksusa, again, refers to clothing. And according to the second opinion of the Gemara, Onasa actually refers to the obligation to support and sustain your wife, based on a pasuk from last week's parsha from Barshas Ekev, Vayanecha Vayari Vecha, that the Jewish people were afflicted in the Midbar. So again, that word is an allusion to Mizonos. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Omer She'era Ksusa, Lefum She'era Ten Ksusa, Shelo Yitin La Lo Shel Yalda Lizkena Velo Shel Zkena Liyalda, Ksusa ve'onasa lefum onasa tin ksusa shelo yitin chadashim bimosachama v'lo shchakim bimosakshamim. According to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, he kind of fuses two of the words in the psukim together, which basically means you have to give clothing that are age appropriate and clothing that are seasonal. So in other words, don't give old women clothing to a younger girl and vice versa, and don't give winter clothing in the summer and vice versa. And then finally, we'll just end off with the last piece in the Gemara. Tani Rav Yosef she'era zokiruv baser shelo yina ba minag parsiem shemeshamshin mitosen dovu she'en. That according to Rav Yosef, she'era refers to the obligation of physical contact, that a husband and a wife have to come, you know, when they're having relations, have to come flesh to flesh, literally. What does that mean? So the Gemara says that the Persians had a practice that when they engaged in relations, they would remain clothed. They would just uncover the parts that needed to be uncovered for relations, and the rest of their body remain clothed. The Gemara says that you're not allowed to do that when you're having relations. That if a husband says, I only want to have relations with my wife if we're basically fully clothed, the Gemara says that that's grounds for the wife to demand divorce, and she would also collect her ksuba, because that's not considered appropriate. If the wife consents to it, that's a different story. But the baseline assumption is that that's not considered to be an appropriate practice.